This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench. Outdoor America is brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Now, here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
It is a great time of year. You know, some people don't like the cold weather, some people do. Corbell likes it anytime. She just likes going out with us no matter what we do. I think we're going to go out and try to catch these fish tomorrow with her. And, you know, I was telling people, it's funny, anyone that follows along knows that Corbell goes out with Kayla and I pretty much everything we do. And she loves it. She loves the outdoors, and she's here with me today, so you might hear her a little bit in the background talking, trying to give her two cents. But, you know, she's got a pretty good opinion most of the time. But anyway, we got the cold front has moved into the Ozarks. What does that mean? Well, usually that means the bucks are moving and the fish are moving. Not only are the bucks moving around, but the fish are moving. You know, everyone, you know, is asking, you know, a lot of people don't or have this idea that whenever it gets cold, really, really cold, the fish stop biting. That is not true. We've talked about it over and over. Matter of fact, the colder the water gets, the better the fishing is. You just got to find out where they're at, where they're located. And once you do, this can be some of the best fishing you'll ever experience in your life. And that's what I was talking about. We're going to head out, I think, over the next, actually, tomorrow we're going to head out and see if we can catch these fish, because I just checked, you know, we got this cold front moves in, and the water got to about 40, oh, let's see, it was 57 degrees. Let's rewind a little bit. It was 70 degrees, folks. It was 70 degrees into last week. Fast forward over the weekend, earlier on this week, we had a cold front move in, got really, really cold. The water went from 70 down to 57, and then the next day it was down to 53, and then down to 47 my last check this morning. But it's going down, and the fish are ready to move. They had been moving already. I noticed this about a month ago. We had another cold spell. And the fish, I noticed it, you know, where I've been catching them. I wouldn't catch them anymore. And I'm looking around, seeing if I see any cruisers. No cruisers. They thought, hey, it's time to go. So I went ahead and headed to their winter hole, or at least in that direction. You know, they may not have just went straight there, but they're kind of inching closer to it. I think this is really going to do them, man. They're going to be there. Stay tuned to see what kind of pictures we post, because I really think that the fish are going to be there. They're going to be locked into the winter hole now that it's dropped down to 40s. Okay, so next question you're asking, why, what's that, why is that 45 degrees, 47, 40s, why is the 40s so significant? And here's the reason why I think. I don't know everything, but here's what I think. Spring water is, you know, low to mid 50 degree temperature. So, you know, any kind of spring around or significant spring, they've got that water at least. But once it gets below that, you know, that's when I think once it gets to spring water or below, you know, 55 or below, that's when they're thinking about heading to the winter holes. And that's what they do. But, you know, believe it or not, I've got some springs around our wintering holes, but they don't set up there in the wintertime. I mean, there may be a few of them there, but it's not loaded like it is in these other holes. So, you know, finding the right winter holes and knowing how to fish for them. So let's talk about that. How do you fish for them? You know, anyone that's, if you never fished in the winter, do you just slow down? You know, a lot of people ask me, what do you do, Tom? And you just take a jig and really, really slow down. And, you know, that's not necessarily the case. You don't have to slow down. I don't like to slow down. I'm a fast power fisherman, and that's what I like doing, and that's what I'll probably continue to always do. So, and it works. If I had to slow down, yes, I'd slow down, drag a jig or a tube or whatever it took. Shoot, even if I had to throw a stinking Ned rig, I'd probably do it if that's what it took to catch these fish. But I found other ways, and I'll tell you, the ways that I like catching these fish is the ways that I do it. I love cranking. I love throwing a crankbait, and that's one of my favorite ways to catch fish if I can, because I love the fast action of being able to cast and retrieve, cast, retrieve, cast, retrieve. I love it. I cover so much more water, and it's you know, experimenting with, you know, do you go fast? Do you go slow? Do you hold your rod down? Do you hold your rod up? And you know, well, I want to touch on that a little bit too, you know, because sometimes it is important to get down a little bit deeper. It is important to do. It's not just as simple as just casting the crankbait out there and reeling it straight back. If you hit like a piece of structure, for example, you want to make sure and pause it. Pause it for a second, or a lot of times I'll mimic that action without the wood. I'll reel it and I'll jerk, pause, jerk, you know, and just kind of, and then reel it fast and slow down, reel it fast. Cause that gives them a real natural look. You know, a crankbait, for example, whether they think if it's a crawfish imitation or a baitfish imitation, they don't just swim through the water at the exact same speed the whole time. You know, if they're around a big fish, they're probably going to be a little bit nervous. You know, they're going to be a little bit nervous. They're probably going to swim a little bit faster if they know they're being chased. Maybe we've all seen it, right? You've seen that little bait fish, that minnow, that shad, being pushed up in the shallows by a bigger fish, and it's just swimming for its life. It's swimming everywhere. It knows what's about to happen. It knows it's about to get ate. And so it's swimming for its life, literally. And that's why with a crankbait, I'll do the same thing. I'll try to speed it up real fast, then slow down, then speed up, then slow down, then speed up, and maybe even just go fast for 2 or 3 seconds and then slow down. And I think a lot of times that triggers that bite, because even if that fish wasn't after that crankbait, he's seen that action, and that's a triggering mechanism. And that's something, that right there is something I want to talk about throughout this entire show on pretty much every bait that I throw. When I tell my clients this, I tell people at seminars, this is exactly how I fish. I fish for reaction bites, 100% reaction bites. There's very, very few times that I can think of that I fish and I'm not trying to get that reaction bite. Whether it's a topwater, it's a reaction bite. Crankbait, it's a reaction bite. A jig even is a reaction bite the way I fish it. So I'm pitching a jig around cover and letting it fall. And as it falls, that's when I get that reaction bite. They'll hit it on the fall, and then I'll set the hook and reel them in. Again, I'm a power fisherman. I don't slow down very often. Even jerkbait fishing. And I know I'm touching on a bunch of different baits right now, but I'm trying to explain to you how I think you need to feed off your strengths. If you're good at being outworking a bait fast. You don't have to slow down necessarily in the wintertime. Just because the water cools off doesn't mean you got to go so slow you can't stand it. My jerkbait fishing, there, you know, when the water's cold, I still move it fast. I don't pause that jerkbait for any more than, guaranteed, no more than 3 to 5 seconds. Most of the time, it's more like 2 seconds tops. It's a jerk, jerk, pause, pause, jerk, pause, jerk, jerk, pause. Literally, you know, probably a full second is about as long as I'm letting it sit. And I think, you know, it's smallmouth in particular, they love the chase of the fish, because, or, you know, whatever it is. I tell people too often, you're working that bait, we'll say it's a fluke, for example, and you're twitching that thing around, because the way I work a fluke is way different than some people think. You know, they think you just tie this bait on that Tommy Bench catches fish with, and it's just going to be a magical bait. They're all going to swim in and eat that fluke, because it's just, you know, it's just a magic bait. And that's not the case at all. You have to work that thing the right way, and you have to read what them fish are telling you. It's a lot easier said than done. You know, spending the time on that water every single day, I do have an advantage, because I see a lot of success and I see a lot of failures, and I can take something away from all of it and apply that to the next time and the next time and the next time and so on and so forth. So yes, I have a huge advantage because I get to go out there a lot and I get to see other people fish a lot. Even if it's not my own success or failures, I get to see what happened with someone else, how they lost that fish or how they didn't, or how they landed the fish or how they got to bite. And, you know, I apply that to my next trip, and I feel like I'm very good at taking away from a certain trip and applying that to another situation later on down the road, whether it be the next day or a year later or however long that is. Again, the water is cooling off. We a major cold front. It's cold, cold, cold. We've had lows in the upper teens, lower 20s. So that water temp has plummeted 15 degrees. Well, let's see, 57, you know, yeah, like 13, probably about 15 degrees in the last week. Over the last 3 days, it has plummeted even probably about 10 or 12 degrees, because that's when the major cold front moved in. It's supposed to warm back up, but I want to take advantage of this. I want to take advantage, and like I said, about going out and seeing the failures and successes of myself and my clients, it helps me. And I want to learn exactly when these fish exactly move in, you know, what temperature do they start stacking up in there? And when do they leave? You know, because like I was telling Kayla a while ago, I just checked the water temp this morning. It was 47.2. And I said, here's the crazy thing about these fish, though. If it warms back up, they're gone. It's not like just a few of them leave. It's like they all pack up, hundreds of them will move in, and hundreds of them will move out that quick. You know, if the water warms back up to 50 degrees, I think they're out of there. They're gone. I think that's the magical number, from the best I can tell, is about 50. But like I said, I'm going to do a little R&D tomorrow, a little research and development, and see what happens. You know, I'll check the water temperature first thing in the morning, and I'm going to head straight to these winter holes, and we're going to find them, and Kayla and I is going to catch them. I mean, I hope that's the plan. If they're there, we're going to catch them, and that's how I'll know if they're really in there or not, is whether we're catching them or not. So hopefully they cooperate, and we can make some sense out of it and figure out exactly what's going on, where they're at, and where they're moving, you know, if they're actually in there. But folks, we got to take a real quick break. I'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about deer hunting, what you could do to chase them bucks, and a few tips on how to increase your chances on getting that big deer this year. We'll be right back right after this, folks.
You're listening to Outdoor America, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. More with Tommy Bench after this. You're listening to Outdoor America. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
Back with Outdoor America. Like I said, I was talking in the first segment about this cold front moving in. It's got everything moving. Not only are the fish moving to the wintering holes, but the deer moving. You big deer hunter, this is the time, man. My cameras have been going off all night long. We had 30 different pictures last night on one camera behind the house. And I say behind the house, it's not right behind the house. It's like several hundred yards in the woods, but it's one of them behind the house. We got one on the other side of the property on my brother's place. And the bucks are going nuts. Anywhere from around midnight till like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Three different bucks come through and was just checking the same scrape and doing their thing like they like to do. So if you're a big deer hunter, now's the time to get out there, start getting excited. I haven't even actually been a whole lot till this morning. I went just a little bit and seen a red fox and lots of deer activity going on. I just didn't stay out long. It is cold. Like I said, this culprit moved in and it is bitterly cold. So you better be prepared to get some hot hands and bundle up, wear extra socks and something to keep your hands and ears warm. But here's a few tips I want to tell you about. If you're not, you know, and some of y'all already know, you know, you've been hunting a long time, but just a few things that I can come up with that I think may help you do better in those deer woods this year. Because a lot of people, especially the younger guys, they don't have that much experience. There's some older guys that haven't been out hunting a lot, you know, and I'm fortunate I get to do it a lot, and I've done it for a long time, and I've learned the same way from my success and also from my failures. So here's a few tips. One, wind direction. Play the wind. We hear that all too much, right? Play that wind. Don't go out there if the deer that you're hunting is going to be downwind from you. Don't do that. Just don't do it. Just go somewhere else or set up somewhere else to where they're not going to be downwind from you. Set up to where they're going to be upwind from you, to where basically they're not going to smell you. You know, we all try to hide our scent. You got scent away, and you know, you can wash your clothes and all that scent free stuff and try to eliminate all your odor you can, but that is their number one defense. And that is their number one defense of predators, and including us, you know, including us as humans. So they have very, very good sniffers. So you don't want to take any chances on that. So make sure you set yourself up for the right wind direction. And, you know, a lot of times you're like, well, I don't know. I don't know how the wind's set up. And this is something I feel like has helped me a lot over the years. Kayla and my brother both call me lucky. And I can't say that they're wrong, because I feel like I'm very, very blessed. God has blessed me a lot, way more than I deserve. That's a fact. But, you know, I'm fortunate enough. I've killed some good deer. I've caught some really big fish. And I just get lucky a lot, it seems. Like, I stumble across stuff that it's like, oh wow, look at this, I just found a whole $200 ladder laying there, you know, or whatever it is. And I was just talking about the river finds I found just a few days ago. I was talking about that on Facebook and showing all the cool stuff that I found, including Ray-Ban sunglasses, a gig head, multiple ladders, and an old stop sign. I mean, you name it, I find it all. But anyway, getting back to the whole point of the story, from hunting out there, I've killed a lot of bucks, but I've got a great place. I've got a great place, some good white oaks. You know, bucks love the timber. Bucks love timber. I know a lot of you guys don't have timber, but if you got a big piece of property, or any piece of property, or you don't have any piece of property, you've got public land to rely on, my best advice to give you is I would hunt a ridge. This is just my personal opinion. Hunt a ridge with a north-facing wind. Basically, you're facing the north. You want that wind to be in your face, and I would hunt on a ridge. That's what I do. On my property, on my brother's property, I hunt the exact same way. I sit facing north because that's the predominant wind. If you think about it, you know, it's really windy. It's usually breezy this time of year. And where's the wind coming out of? The north. So use that wind to your advantage. Face the wind. That's going to keep that deer from being able to smell you. And whenever, by the time he does realize you're there, hopefully you've already drawn back, and that black eagle arrow is ready to go right through his core right there. But either that, or you know, that 30-30 or 30-06, whatever it is, maybe you got him riding your sights on the scope, and you're ready to celebrate after you kill the buck of a lifetime. Speaking of buck of a lifetime, I'm sure if you guys listened to the show, you heard my story about last year's Big John buck. And I'm going to tell that story again. I think I'll tell it next segment and tell the story, get everyone pumped up for deer season. Because like I said, it's just getting hot right now. It's getting cold outside, but the deer hunting and the movement's getting good. They're really moving around, and I think it's about to go down. And just because you don't have a lot of bucks in your area, you never know when, you know, this is the time of year them deer start rutting and they'll be moving. You'll have deer coming in on your property that you didn't even know existed, because they're just traveling. They're moving around looking for other hot does. So just time on the water, time in the woods. You just cannot replace that. So get out there, spend time. Even if you don't see anything, don't get discouraged. You know, just try to pay attention to what's going on. And if you've seen something, then pay attention to it and apply that to the next time. If you see something different, yeah, just apply that to, you know, for example, I seen a deer last year that was, I was sitting down on the bottom and I seen a deer come across the ridge and I'm like, well, hopefully it'll come down here. Well, it didn't. It didn't come down. And then I seen a buck chasing this doe, crud, and I'm like, God, well, all right, well, maybe they'll come down here. Well, instead of just saying, well, I just got unlucky there, I thought, well, that's where I need to be set up at. I need to be up on that ridge where they apparently are traveling up and down that ridge. And then as I went up to do a little investigating after that particular hunt, I happened to notice a big line of scrapes and rubs. I'm like, well, holy crap, no wonder. This is their path. This is the path these bucks travel. And see, here's what they do. Them bucks can roam them high ridges and be able to smell every hot doe on that property because they're up high, you know, and the scent, heat, everything rises, right? So they're going to be able to smell everything up high. Not only can they smell it, but they can see. Now they're so much higher. It's just like a bird's eye view. The higher they are, the better they can see. So that's another reason why they like being up that high. And so I figured that out. And what I do is, what I did was I made an adjustment. Of course, rewinding here, I was on my brother's property, first time I ever hunted it. I just picked this spot, looked like a good saddle, you know, where two ridges come together and drop down in this like dry creek bottom. And I thought this would be a perfect place to sit. Well, that's when I started noticing all this activity up on the hill. And so I thought, you know, that's where I need to be. So later on that day, I told Kayla, I said, I'm going to move up on that ridge. So I grabbed a chair and I went up on that ridge. And sure enough, that evening, I hadn't been sitting half an hour. Here come three or four does. And I'm like, this is great. Well, then, and then more deer and more deer and more deer and more deer. And it was like over the course of the next three or four days or a week, I just kept seeing deer after deer after deer, including several bucks. I realized that, you know, this is exactly, I thought, why didn't I come up here to begin with? This is exactly how I hunt on our property. Why wouldn't I have done it here? Well, I figured it out pretty quick. I got lucky and took, you know, the failures and successes that I had. I guess I just got lucky and seen that the activity going on and realized that's where they like to run. They're running that ridge. So like I said, just pay attention. If you see something out there and you wonder, like, it wasn't no accident that they're taking that path. They're taking a path for a reason. They're either taking that path because it's the least, you know, it's the least resistance, or they're being pushed that way. But if there's a fence, you know, something like that, they're probably going to go around it or find a weak spot in that fence. But, you know, there's lots of things you can do to increase your odds, and I'm going to tell you all about it, folks. Just stick around. I'm Tommy Bench. This is Outdoor America. We'll be right back right after this.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Boatworks, performance specialists. More with Tommy Bench after this. You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
I am talking deer hunting. You know, cold front moved in, the deer on the move. There's so much greatness to this time of year. I know all you summer fans think this is just terrible. You know, you'd rather be sweating. Not me. I don't like to be frozen either, but I don't like to be sweating. I'd much rather have to bundle up than have to try to figure out a way to cool off in the summertime. But regardless, here it is. It's cooling off. I think maybe I like the cold so much because there's so many great things going on when it gets cold. Like right now, the deer are on the move. I haven't seen this much deer movement until like right in the last couple of days. And all of a sudden they're moving now. It's getting good if you're a deer hunter, especially if you're a bow hunter or an archery alternative method, whatever they call it these days. Get out there and stick one. I mean, it's a great time to be outdoors. Even just not the fact that, you know, getting a deer, harvesting a deer or not, there's so much to witness out there. You know, I seen a fox this morning. You know, just it's really cool to see, witness wildlife in their natural habitat, doing what they do every single day of their life. Now you get to see that, and it's just really neat. I really enjoy sitting out there, even though it's bitterly cold. I won't lie, I got cold this morning, and I only stayed out for about an hour and a half, but I had some stuff to do, and just like every other day, I love hunting, I love fishing, and that's what I was talking about. It's cooled off. not only are the deer moving with this cold front, but the fish are going to be moving too. We talked about in the first segment how there's a lot of folks, including me, growing up, I didn't realize that once it got cold, this fish would still bite. I didn't know. I didn't know any better. I was ignorant to the fact that they still did. I tried to catch them the same ways I caught them before, and it just didn't work. And so I figured, hey, they're just not eating. So until I got older and started learning a lot more and realizing and listening to other people that have spent a lot of time out there, and my good buddy Schultz, John Sapper, Robbie Thompson, all the greats that I know that I look up to, they'll always say, time on the water, time in the woods, time out there cannot be replaced. You cannot replace that. You cannot replace that with listening to what I have to say, because I have the time on the water. Doesn't mean it's gonna correlate to what you have. It helps though. Listening to people that have all that time on the water makes a big difference. But having that intuition of knowing what to do, and that's the difference. It brings me to a part where Kayla was twitching a fluke around, and a big smallmouth come up to it, nose to it, and she didn't know what to do. And in my mind, I didn't know what to tell her to do, but I knew what I would do. I just didn't know. You have to just kind of read the fish, and just knowing how the fish acts is usually what decides on what I do. If I slow it down and he acts uninterested, then I speed it up. If I speed it up and he acts uninterested, then I'll slow it down. You just got to kind of determine what to do depending on what he's doing, but it's hard to tell that. It's hard to know that in the heat of the moment. It's literally like, make the decision right now or it's too late. Same thing with deer hunting. Sometimes you got to make a decision. And what I like to do is I like to plan everything out. I talked about wind direction. Always have that wind in your face. You always want that wind in your face to where everything you're looking at is not going to smell you. If something comes right behind you, obviously it's going to smell you. But what I try to do is I try to eliminate any paths right directly behind me, if all possible. If there's a path that I know that's definitely a deer trail, I'll sit, on the downwind side of that, to where when they're walking that trail, I smell them, but they don't smell me. Something else it's very, very smart to do, and try to do this in early season. So it's a little too late now if you have it, but you can still do it. I've done it, and I've had good success with doing it. I think that's where people underestimate deer. They think, oh, you change the woods up too much, you move too many trees, or you cut too many limbs out of the way. You got to have a path, because the worst thing ever is to spend all this money and time investing and being out there freezing your tail off, trying to have that opportunity of finally getting the opportunity, and now you don't have a clear path to even make a clean, ethical shot. Get your little handsaw, trim these little limbs off, get you some shooting lanes. If you know where you think they're going to walk, and sometimes it changes. It changes. You'll see it happen in person, and you're like, dadgum, I thought it was going, I figured they was going to be going this path. They're actually going this path. Well, that's okay. Now learn from that. Now you know they're going the other path, or at least sometimes they are. Go get you a couple shooting lanes to where you can get them through that path. Time in the woods is irreplaceable. You witness that. Now you can make adjustments for the next time. That's exactly what I do. I trim limbs all the time. I know that's a lot of hunters don't do that, but I do. So that's one thing I'll tell you, is get you some good shooting lanes. Play the wind. And, white oaks, if you got them, but they'll travel through cedars. They like that for cover. Here's another thing. Now you finally got the opportunity. You got the wind. You're playing the wind just right. You got your scent down. You got your calls out there. How much you're going to call? That's another thing. You don't want to overcall. Too often than not, young anglers in particular, they'll start calling and calling and calling. You just got to slow down. You don't want to call every 5 minutes. You need to wait at least 15 to 20 minutes, or 30 if you can, depending on what's going on. If you see a doe and it kind of leaves, but you think she may be being followed, try to get them bucks' attention. Maybe rattle a little bit, but don't over rattle. I think that's another thing, is growing up, I heard these guys rattling, and it was so neat to hear it. But then when I finally heard real life deer rattle in the woods, it was nothing like what I heard these guys try to imitate. They're crack, 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 just rattling, just going nuts on these rattles. And it's not really like that. They're rattling antlers like they're just sitting there shaking their heads back and forth. And that's what we grew up hearing. But that's not at all what I've heard in the woods. When I've heard deer fighting in the woods, it sounds more like two broomsticks being smacked together and maybe a little bit of rustling trying to break themselves loose just for a brief second, but it's crack, crack, crack. That's more what I hear more so than the actual rattle. So that's something else to keep in mind. Really pay attention to what's going on out there in the woods. Don't overcall. Do not overcall. If you sit there and call and call and call, you're going to get busted. What's going to happen is they're going to start moving in and you don't realize they're getting close and you start calling again by rattling or grunting or something like that. And they're going to be right on top of you and you don't even realize it. And they're going to bust you and they're going to know you. Now you just educated that deer. So now the next time you call, he's not going to be, he's like, okay, you got me that time. And next time I'm going to be a little bit more leery of that call. So you want, you know, best case scenario, what you would like to do is As soon as you get a good call in, you get that deer to come in and you're able to harvest that deer. If it's the deer you're looking for, if it's a legal deer, you know, you don't want to shoot a little baby buck or you know, I'm not judging on if you want to shoot a buck, baby buck or not. Some counties in the state of Missouri do have antler restrictions and you cannot shoot anything with less than 4 points on one side. So, you know, keep that in mind. Make sure you know your rules and regulations. And, you know, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a mature deer? That's another thing. With calling, you don't want to sit there and call with a big old mature deep old grump. You know, you want it because otherwise you're limiting yourself to the biggest dominant, most dominant buck in the woods, and you really don't want to do that. Because what if there's a really nice deer that you'd be super thrilled about, but now you're scaring him off because he's only a 3-year-old deer and he's not wanting to get his tail whooped by a 5 or 6-year-old, or you know, who knows? There's so many situations, so many scenarios. We'll go through them a little bit more. Like I said, it's prime time deer hunting time, and I'm going to talk more about it all I can. We're going to touch on a little bit of wintertime fishing as well. But folks, this is Tommy Bench, and this is Outdoor America. We'll be right back right after this.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Baitworks, shop where the pros shop. Here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
You know, I don't get to talk about deer hunting a whole lot, so I'm really excited to talk about deer hunting this episode. And we all, I mean, of course, I got to talk about fishing because that's my love and passion and what we love to do. And like I said, Kayla and I are going to get out there tomorrow. After this cold front water cooled off, I think them fish have really should have pushed into their winter holes. At least half of them, even if not all of them, there should be enough there to where we should have a phenomenal day. So I'm really looking forward to that. And stay tuned. If we catch any dinosaurs, you know, hopefully we can catch a couple of them dinosaurs we like to chase. And you know, for any of you that don't know what a dinosaur is, it's we're talking about smallmouth here, but you know, I call these big fish dinosaurs, and the reason why I come up with this is because of how big and how old some of these fish are. And so that's kind of where, you know, I got a 20 inches is kind of my limit on where I feel that's a dinosaur. So we're looking for that 20 inch plus, you know, 20, 21, 22. Anything over 20 is a legit dinosaur. And so, you know, that's the holy grail. All smallmouth anglers run here. If they could catch a 20, I think they would be more than pleased, more than happy. I know lots of 40, 50, 60, even 70-plus-year-old men and women that have never caught a 20-inch smallmouth in their life. So it's a pretty big deal, you know, and like I said earlier, I'm blessed. You know, I'm not bragging or gloating or being like I'm better than anyone else because I'm not. I put my pants on the same way everyone does. God, for some reason, blesses me a lot. He blesses me on a daily basis, and I'm very thankful for that he blessed me in every way possible. Got a great family, beautiful wife and baby, and great deer hunting and fishing, and it's just, I get to do it every day of my life, so it's pretty amazing. But either way, get out there. It's time to go deer hunting. Missouri firearm season is right around the corner. It is literally next weekend. It is next weekend, so a week from today. And so get out there and get ready. If you're a Missouri resident and you're just big into the old traditional firearm season, that's kind of been a a tradition in this state for years and years and years. It's almost like a holiday in this state. People, you know, there's a lot of country folks around here, and dadgum, our schools are so country, it seems like, in my neck of the woods, that, you know, they let the kids out for deer season and you give them an extra day, and that's pretty cool, you know, really, because, you know, I got a kid now that's done very well in her youth. She passed up on some smaller deer, and finally, you know, her last year, this is a really, really cool story, actually. Her last year was able to harvest her biggest buck to date still yet, and it was a really, really good one. It was a young deer, but it was bigger than most of the older deer as far as the rack size, and it can be a little deceiving, you know, so that's something else. You know, you just get better with age. The deer do as well. You know, your experiences get better with age. I'm reading, like, how big is that deer? How old is that deer? And the same thing, you know, the same thing for them deer. They just get bigger with age, and that's a big difference from 2.5 to 3.5, and from 3.5 to 4.5, and as well from 4.5 to 5.5. So, you know, if you can let them go and let them grow, that's probably the best method. But, you know, not always the easiest thing to do. So if you're happy with it, I say fire away and hope, just be safe about it. And, that's the most important thing. But like I said, it's, prime time deer hunting time. The cold front moved in. These deer are on the move. The rut is about to kick in. Firearm season is just right around the corner. So if you're a bow hunter and you're wanting to try to get that nice buck before all the gun hunter, before the orange arm, we like to call it, comes out, get out there and spend as much time as you can out there in these woods, and just pay attention, because these deer are moving. I haven't seen, like, any rut activity at all. But I haven't spent a lot of time out there, to be honest with you. So this morning was only the second time I'd been out, and I've been on the water so much. So I'm going to try to do that a little bit more and get up bow hunting a little bit this week before the Orange Army comes out. So I reiterate with what I kind of said about the tips. You know, first things first, wind direction. Play the wind, play the wind, play the wind. I can't stress that enough. Make sure you have that wind in your favor, wind in your face. You know, and if you don't know, like, why do I want the wind in my face? You don't want the deer to be able to smell you. So you want to be able to put yourself in position to where if you do see these deer, they're going to be upwind from you, not downwind from you. And also calling, calling is a very effective method. There's grunt, you know, grunt calling. There's doe bleat calling. There's rattling, you know. Personally, I'm a big rattler. I love to rattle. That's about the only call that I use. I don't grunt much, but I know a lot of people that do well with grunting, and I think I may even mix in some grunts here and there, because I was just sitting there out in the woods this morning thinking about it. I thought, why is grunting? You know, I can understand why rattling works so well, but why would grunting work so well? You know, rattling works so well because another buck hears rattling, and it knows there's two bucks fighting over a doe, right? Well, why would a grunt work so well? Come to think of it, well, what does a buck do whenever it's trying to get a doe to stop or to get her attention? It grunts at her. That's what he does. So it makes perfect sense. You know, you if another buck hears grunts going on, obviously there's another buck with a doe, you know, and so if there's another doe, now he has opportunity to go take that doe from the other buck. That's the whole name of the game during this time of year. Also, to any of you non-deer hunters, be careful out there on the roads, because they're going to start moving and you're going to see it. If you've lived in the state very long or in the Midwest very long, you know this is the time of year when deer are on the move and they're crossing roads and they're not paying a lick of attention on what's going on. So be careful out there on the roads. Attention, you know, it's another thing. When they're in that mode and they're chasing, it's hard to get them stopped. That was one other topic I want to talk about. You know, stop deer to shoot or no? Do you stop a deer or not? Well, if it's running, absolutely. You do not want to try to make a shot on a deer on a run. But if I got a deer just walking through the woods at just a slow walk, then I've found, to me personally, I feel like it's best just to put my crosshairs on the vitals, you know, right behind the front shoulders, where I like to aim. I make that shot on the walk, because last year in particular, I got burned. I got burned by trying to stop a deer. And when I did, instead of the deer stopping, it stopped, but it turned at me and ran right towards me all at the same time. And that ended up being a big mistake on my count because now it's facing at me. And then this is with a gun. This is with a gun. I had a 300 blackout that we just got for the kids and decided to hunt with it that morning. And it didn't work out so well. I shot that deer, and I thought for sure he was dead. I mean, the blood trail, a corbel could have followed that blood trail. But we followed it. And, you know, if you listen, you've heard the story about this deer. And if not, I think I might just tell this last segment just to get everyone pumped up and ready to get out there where maybe they could have, you know, get excited about the biggest deer. Because that's what it's all about. You know, how many times do you go out there for deer season and kill the biggest buck of your life? Not very often. It's only happened once, right? Or maybe it's never happened yet. But that's what gets us excited. You know, the old buck fever, the deer camps, and getting excited about deer season. All pumped up, ready to go, telling stories, making up lies, maybe not lies, maybe a little bend in the truth. Who knows, you know, but that's the fun in it. That's the exciting part. So stick around, folks. I'm going to tell you my story of last year, my big buck of a lifetime, how it went down, how it ended up, all the good stuff. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back right after this on Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. More with Tommy Bench after this. This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Summit Finance Group. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
Here we are with our last segment. I'm going to try to break it down the best I can. Actually, I'm going to tell you a story of Big John. This is, you know, what we all get excited about. You know, a deer of a lifetime, that old buck fever. Everyone's talking about around the fire the night before opening day about how they're going to shoot the, you know, this 30-point buck or the whatever it is. You know, this was a 12-point buck. This was a mainframe 12. And anyone that knows much about deer, you know, the points aren't so much as important as far as how big the deer is as much as the age of the deer, you know, the mass of the deer, how wide it is, how tall it is. I mean, you could have a 12-point buck that could be literally 80 inches, you know, in total what they call total diameter, not diameter, but, you know, overall. Or you could have a 12-pointer that's 200 inches, 200 plus. So, and this was one of them that was pushing that 200, closer to the 200-inch range than it was the 80-inch range for sure. But like I said, biggest deer in my life. I'm going to tell you the story of how it went down. It's exactly how I was telling you about sitting up on these ridges, north-facing wind. I was doing that very thing. I was sitting up on this ridge. It was a cold morning. It was the second weekend of firearm season of last year. And I decided, I hunt woods a lot. It's just a small, it's not very long shots. Any shot that I take is less than 100 yards, probably more like 75 yards or less. So I thought, I'll just take that 300 blackout we just bought for the kids. You know, I'm going to try that thing out. It's a cool looking little gun. And yeah, I think Kayla had already shot a buck with hers and with that same exact gun. And the kids had shot it. And, you know, it seemed to shoot good. So I thought, I'll just try that gun out. So I get up there in my spot. And I'm set up, and it wasn't long. You know, just like, well, I love hunting mornings. I don't necessarily like getting up early, but I love hunting in the mornings. And so I get out there, and it wasn't, from the best of my memory, it seemed like it was just 30 minutes into the hunt. Here comes the doe. And I could tell by the way this doe was walking, it was kind of looking back behind it. It was being followed. It was being followed, and I thought, man, this is great. If there's a buck chasing this doe, you know, I'll let this doe go. And I think we'd already had a deer or two anyway from archery season. And so I thought, man, this is great. Maybe I'll see a big buck. The doe walks to my right and kind of looks back and then starts heading down the ridge. And I thought, well, here we go. I'm kind of getting set up, just ready for this buck to show up. Nothing. 2 minutes later, nothing. 3 minutes, 4 minutes, nothing. I'm like, what in the heck is going on here? You know, so I rattle. I get my rattle out. I rattle a little bit. Sure enough, here come this 10-pointer. And I'm like, well, he's not real big. You know, so I didn't want to shoot this deer because he wasn't, you know, necessarily a giant deer by any means. And I'd shot deer that size before. But, you know, I was like, well, that's the deer that's following him. And sure enough, you know, that's exactly what happened. I thought, well, that's pretty neat. And I thought, man, well, that's a bummer, though. And right as I was just basically just kind of figuring out what this deer was. Was he big enough? Was he too big or too small? Or where was he headed? In the corner of my eye, I see another deer. And to my great delight, I guess, I was like, holy smokes. That has got to be the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life in person. In real life, on the hoof, this is the biggest deer I've ever seen that close. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, my heart's pumping. I'm like, here he comes. He heard that rattle and he's going to come right behind this other buck. And so I got my gun and I see exactly where he's walking. I thought, okay, there's the spot right there. There's the shooting lane I got. And this is a chip shot. This is going to be like a 40 yard shot with a deer rifle, you know, a 300 blackout. I'm thinking, this is going to be easy. This is awesome. Broadside and everything. A lot of brush in the way, but I know I've got that one small opening. So as soon as he's walking, I thought, well, here's my chance. I need to stop him. If I get him that opening, I can just get him to stop just for 2 seconds, just for 5 seconds or less, so I can get a good, you know, settle in on him, get a good, clean, ethical shot, and seal the deal. So he gets to his spot, and he's walking along. He's on alert. You know, he's on alert already because he heard that rattle. And there's a buck right in front of him. So he's probably like, okay, what other deer are around here? I already know this buck in front of me is here, but he's just a little guy and I'm massive. So he's probably not too worried about him, but he's looking around for whatever else he probably, you know, I rattled. So he's looking for these other bucks. As soon as he gets that opening, I got my sights set on him. I stop him. I try to, man. And instead of just stopping for a second, he turns directly to me and lunges, two big lunges right at me, like, and then he stops. And now he's just sitting there facing, looking right at me. Now he's about 20 yards away. And I'm like, oh gosh, what do I do? What do I do? If I wait for him to turn, I may not get a good shot. He may be on the run. When he turns, he may be running. So it's like, make a decision. I thought, well, I'll just shoot him right through the chest. It'll go right through, blow out his heart. He'll be dead. If I shoot him, hit him right in the chest. The deer kind of bucks up a little bit, runs, takes about 8 or 10 kind of lunges. And then he gets right to the edge of the ridge. And then he just walks down the ridge. Well, I think, well, shoot, I've got him. So I call Kayla, I text Kayla and told her all about it. I'm all pumped. I'm like, this is the biggest deer of my life. This is by far the biggest deer I've ever shot. So excited, get all pumped up. I tell her I'm just going to walk over there, look on the edge of the ridge, see if I can see him laying down there because I'm sure of it. He's dead. I mean, I got him. This is over with. And so I get up after I got the phone with her and I take about 20 steps and then my phone starts vibrating. It's Kayla. Just don't get up. He just walked in front of the camera. Gosh, dang it. So I back out. I wait. So I'm just going to wait. I'm going to sneak out of here, backside, go back home, get Kayla. We're going to give him an hour or so and come back. So that's what we did. Snuck out of there, come back home. We wait about an hour. She wants to go with me, and I'm pumped. You know, I get to take my wife and baby with me. We're going to get all these pictures of this giant deer. I'm so excited. Biggest deer in my life. So we go right back to the camera, right back to where she's seen him walk in front of the camera, and there's blood everywhere. I mean, this is a blood truck war belt could follow. It was so good of a blood trail. You didn't have to look. You just started walking and just kept walking because there was blood everywhere. I honestly don't know how this deer did not bleed out. It's phenomenal how resilient and tough they are. But we followed it. Finally, we got to a point where I'm like, where'd he go? And then I see this deer kind of take a couple hops. There's my giant buck right there. He's still alive. So long story short, we back out. We get a professional tracker with a dog. He comes out the next day. We finally catch up to the deer. He said, there's your deer. You want to get it? But this deer keeps crossing properties, but he's hurt. He's moving slow, but he's still alive. Well, we get to a piece of property. You know, I'd asked all my neighbors if I could go on the property, find the deer. All of them said, yeah, no problem. But I come to a piece of property that I didn't have a chance to ask the owner because I didn't think he'd ever go that route. And there actually would end up being hunters there. I done the right thing. I backed out. I said, nope, man, this deer ain't worth running a relationship with my neighbor, so I backed out. But you know what? He's still out there for this year, folks. And we're going to be after him. I hope Haley gets him. If not, I hope I get him. Hope you're pumped up about deer season. I hope to see you out on the water or in the woods this week, this month. Good luck to all the fish anglers and hunters out there. Till next week, I'm Tommy Bench, and I will see you on the radio next week.
You've been listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Bass Tank, whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it, and by Summit Finance Group. Join us each Saturday morning at 5 a.m. for Outdoor America with Tommy Bench on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Catch up on Outdoor America programs. Listen on demand at 610sports.com weekend programming channel.
For Tommy Bench, this is Mark Miller. Thanks for listening to Outdoor America, and have a great weekend.